time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry ended a brief visit to Geneva Monday in effort to try to salvage a two-month-old U.S.-Russian brokered cessation of hostilities weakened by violence in Syria. He said Washington and Moscow have made progress in trying to contain the fighting.
Russia and the United States have agreed that there will be additional personnel who will work from here in Geneva on a daily basis, 24/7, in order to try to make sure that there is a better job and a better ability to be able to enforce the cessation of hostilities day to day.
Kerry met Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al Jubeir and UN Syria envoy Stefan de Mistura.
Aleppo, in particular, needs to be addressed. 254 victims have been taking place during the last few days. Three hospitals facilities have been touched. There is no excuse for not finding again, reinvigorating and reinstalling and re-implementing what has been the only strong message the Syrian people have heard from all of us, that it's possible to have talks when finally the cessation of hostilities is reducing the violence on them.
Kerry said an agreement on Aleppo could be announced in coming days. Authorities in Kenya have arrested the owner of a condemned building that collapsed Friday in the capital, Nairobi, as the death toll from that accident rose to at least 21 people on Monday. Rescue workers say dozens of people who lived in the apartment complex are still missing, but that hopes are fading of finding more survivors in the rubble. The building, which was close to a river, collapsed following heavy rains that caused flooding and landslides. This is VOA News. There was no sign Monday of a repeat of the mass weekend protest and sit-in by Shia backers of cleric Muqtada el-Sadr in Baghdad's Green Zone. They were marking a religious festival instead. But Sadr has vowed to return to the side of the central government and foreign embassies to press authorities on reform or to call for new elections. In Washington Monday, White House spokesman Josh Earnest remained supportive of Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's government.
Prime Minister Abadi has demonstrated a commitment to prioritizing a government philosophy that unites the country. You know, that's why the United States has been supportive of his efforts to implement reforms. But ultimately, those reforms need to be responsive to the concerns and priorities of the Iraqi people. That's his top priority. That's why the United States can be supportive of his efforts. But ultimately, it's Prime Minister Abadi listening to the Iraqi people that will make decisions about how to effectively run that country.
Sadr has demanded a government of technocrats to replace the current leadership. Political parties have rejected many of Mr. Abadi's attempts at reform by removing members of their own parties from power. A car bomb Monday killed at least 14, wounded more than 40 in Baghdad as Shia pilgrims in Baghdad mark the anniversary of the death of a revered 8th century religious leader. A parked car containing explosives detonated in a southwest neighborhood, no immediate claim of responsibility. For the first time in nearly 40 years, a U.S. cruise ship docked Monday in Havana, opening another chapter in revived U.S.-Cuban relations established just last year. The Carnival Cruise Line's Adiona and its 700 passengers left the Port of Miami Sunday. Arnold Donald is president of the Carnival Corporation.
We want to thank the Obama administration. We want to thank Cuba for making all this possible. And we're very, very happy to be here with our Fathom brand.
The Adonia will sail to Havana twice a month, although tourist travel to the island is still barred under a U.S. trade embargo. Regular air service between the two countries expected to resume later this year. Venezuela's opposition says it's delivered a petition to election authorities calling for a nationwide referendum to remove President Nicolas Maduro from office. The opposition Democratic Unity Roundtable says it's collected nearly 2 million signatures, more than 9 times the number needed to launch the referendum process. Voters in the Midwest U.S. state of Indiana head to the polls Tuesday in both Republican and Democratic presidential primary elections, a vote seen as crucial to Texas Senator Ted Cruz's effort to keep New York billionaire businessman Donald Trump from securing a first ballot victory at the Republican Party's presidential nominating convention. On the Democratic side, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton maintains a comfortable delegate lead over her lone rival, Vermont Socialist Senator Bernie Sanders. President Obama told a cable news audience Monday the decision to hunt down and kill al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden was a priority, while the mission to do so was debated. Mr. Obama spoke on the cable news network. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The party of Liberia's George Weah is denying that a warrant for his arrest has been issued in the U.S. state of Georgia for child abandonment.
While it is true that a court document published on the 18th talked about a warrant, but also the same court issued another document that neutralizes or withdraws that file of 18 April 2016. So as we speak, there is no arrest warrant for Mr. Weah.
Mamba Molu is vice chairman for operations and mobilization for Liberia's main opposition Congress for Democratic Change Party. Children are worst affected by drought in Ethiopia, and South Sudan refugees look forward to returning home now that peace appears to have come to their country.
Actually, it is really a great excitement and very joyous about the coming of Dr. Riek Machar Ten-Gurion into Juba. We were not even expecting that he's going to come.
Malo Riak is vice chairperson of a South Sudanese refugee community in neighboring Uganda. An exhibition of contemporary art opens today in Dakar, Senegal. And we'll also take you to Abidjan for the Lights of Africa through the eyes of 54 African artists. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's main opposition party, the Congress for Democratic Change, the CDC, is denying that a warrant has been issued for the arrest of its leader and the presumptive candidate for the 2017 presidential election, George Oppong Weah. The Liberian online publication Front Page Africa reports that a Newton County court in the U.S. state of Georgia has issued a warrant for Weah's arrest for child abandonment and failure to pay child support. Mamba Molu, vice chairman for operations and mobilization for the CDC, says the case in the Georgia court is politically motivated by people who are trying to diminish Weah's popularity ahead of the election.
The speculation that there is an arrest warrant for Mr. Weah, quoting court sources, is just not true. While it is true that a court document published on the 18th talked about a warrant issued, but also the same court issued another document that neutralizes or withdraws that court file of 18 April 2016. So as we speak, there is no arrest warrant for Mr. Weah.
Mr. Mulba, what accounts for a hearing being scheduled on May 11th this year?
We have to leave those details with Mr. Weah. As a matter of fact, it's a fact that Mr. Weah has knowledge with the individual that is a complainant. It is a normal relationship, as with any couple anywhere in the world or people who have had interactions in the past. So regarding a child, Mr. Weah is one that's always cared for children, not just his own, but children of the world, children of Africa, Liberian children. So he cannot be the kind of person that abandons a child, as is speculated in the complaint filed by the individual. Now, what is interesting is Madam Gonu Glay happens to be the former Secretary General of the Alternative National Congress, the NC, that broke away from the CDC, influenced by domestic state actors to try to fight to diminish the popularity of Mr. Weah in the CDC. So it is just clear and understandable where this kind of motivation comes from to rush the court. But albeit, we respect the rights of children, we respect the rights of women, so we are not going to be castigating her. We have simply come to provide details that Mr. Weah is not wanted anywhere in the world and there's no arrest warrant for him to the extent of the publication from East Africa. And we hope Mr. C, the publisher of From East Africa newspaper, we do a retraction of that story because it does not reflect the truth.
Talk to me about this Miape Gono Glay. She was connected with the CDC, and does George Weah have a child by this Gono Glay?
Well, that is not in dispute. As a matter of fact, our political leader has not disputed the existence of that reality, that the two have a beautiful child, and Mr. Weah has always cared for that child, whether it's the child's education, the child's well-being, the child's domestic care, the emotional, psychological, he has always been there for that child. But sometimes when you find yourself in the politics the way he is, and after an immediate declaration that has put him on the path to the presidency, it cannot be surprising for this kind of action to come. For instance, we are hearing that there are influential state actors that are motivating this action because of the fear that there is no contender against Mr. Weah in the ensuing general elections that is to come a year after today. There is a court warrant of 26 April 2016 that withdraws the warrant on 18th April that Mr. Roger Xie is supporting. So we hope now with this information provided that Mr. Xie's people will go to press and do a retraction, because what he published, it does not reflect the reality of court records.
Mwamba Malu is Vice Chairman for Operations and Mobilization for Liberia's Congress for Democratic Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The court in Covington in the U.S. state of Georgia confirmed to VOA that a petition was filed by the mother of Weah's 10-year-old daughter, Miapa Gonogle. The court also confirmed that a hearing has been scheduled on May 11, 2016. Kenna White is the Judicial Tech One, or the clerk of the court for criminal hearings.
There is a hearing scheduled for May 11th at 9 a.m.
Who is the defendant?
George Weah.
George Weah, and what is the case about? Is it listed?
Child abandonment, hasn't paid child support according to the applicant.
And would you say how long has he not paid child support?
She says it's been a couple months.
Who is the complainant?
The child's mother.
Okay, any name to that?
I couldn't pronounce it if I had to.
Could you spell it for me?
M-E-A-P-E-H, Gonogle.
How many children are involved here? One or two children?
One.
And so the case is scheduled for May 11th?
Yes, sir.
George Weah is in Liberia. What, does he have to come to the United States?
That's between him and his attorney.
Okay. Is he represented according to the case file? Is he represented?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And your name again, please?
Kenna.
And how do you spell it?
K-E-N-N-A.
And your last name is White?
Yes, sir.
What's your title?
Judicial Tech One.
Judicial Tech. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Tech as in T-E-C-H?
Yes, sir.
Tech One. What does that mean? What do you do?
I process papers and I'm clerk in the court for the criminal hearings.
Okay. I do appreciate very much talking to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kenna White is the Judicial Tech One, or clerk of the court for criminal hearings for the Newton County Court in Covington in the U.S. state of Georgia. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda welcomed last week's formation of the transitional government. They say they are relieved that at least peace is returning to South Sudan and they can soon return to their homes. Bonifacio Taban spoke to refugees at Buyale Refugee Settlement Camp in Uganda and has this report for VOA.
South Sudanese women sing songs about peace during a community function last weekend at the Biala Refugees Settlement Camp in Uganda. Many South Sudanese refugees in Uganda said they won't return home after living more than 2 years in exile. Maloria Vice Chairperson of the South Sudanese community in Biala Refugee Settlement Camp said for several months many refugees here felt it was meaningless to plan for the future.
Actually, it is really a great excitement and very joyous about the coming of Dr. Riek Machar Tengurgon into Juba. By the day, we were not even expecting that he's going to come. It was really by the time when he touched down Juba that it came to our attention that a peace has come back home to South Sudan.
John Ginub Otto, a musician who played to neighboring Uganda when the fighting broke out in late 2013, said like their fellow citizens back home, refugees in Uganda are tired of war. Speaking in Arabic, Otto said he hoped the peace deal, which led to the formation of the transitional government of national unity, will help reunite people torn apart by the war.
We believe this is the beginning of the implementation of the peace agreement, and we believe in future conflict will not repeat itself. They are coming together once more to form the transitional government of national unity is a good sign for us.
The renowned singer said she will use music to promote peace among South Sudanese community, saying music can teach people to shun tribalism. Speaking in Nuer, Marza Nyakume, a South Sudanese refugee and a church leader in Biala, said peace should be embraced by the leaders and citizens. Nyakume said South Sudanese are gathered as a community here today to thank God for the return of peace to South Sudan. He had it The coming of our leader means a lot, and we have to thank God for bringing us peace. According to UNHCR, there are nearly 125,000 South Sudanese refugees in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting in Bialakam in Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bonk County, Central Liberia, Radio Life in Lofa County, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, and Kisi FM in Tanzania. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Ethiopia is dealing with its worst drought in decades, and children are the most vulnerable to the food shortages, leaving them sick and unable to go to school. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from the Matahara district, where most citizens are dependent on humanitarian aid.
Over 10 million Ethiopians need urgent food assistance because of the ongoing drought. Children are the worst affected as they are the most vulnerable. This mother was admitted to the clinic with her 3-year-old malnourished child.
My baby got sick because there's no food.
These young boys stopped going to school to help out their families after all the cattle died due to the drought. The Ethiopian government is working together with humanitarian organizations by providing food, especially for the 6 million children at risk of hunger, disease, and lack of water.
Due to malnutrition, due to hunger, the children suspected to malnutrition that causes slow brain development, finally to damage their thinking abilities, and they may aggravate, for example, diarrhea.
Over $800 million in emergency funding has been provided, but Ethiopia's government and the United Nations say a total of $1.4 billion is needed for this year. The bulk of those funds is to provide food. Receiving aid is the only way this mother can feed her 6 children.
Because of the drought, we have nothing except the government's support. We have nothing at home. We have nothing to feed our children. We don't have drinking water.
Food aid will be needed into 2017 here in Ethiopia and in other parts of Eastern and Southern Africa, also experiencing drought, believed to be caused by the periodic weather phenomenon El Nino. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News in the Metahara district of Ethiopia.
An exhibition bringing together the work of 54 African artists, one from each country, is touring the continent after debuting at COP21 in Paris. Called Lumières d'Afrique, the show centers on access to electricity and, more figuratively, ideas that enlighten. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan, the exhibition's first stop.
It is a first in the history of modern art, African artists from every country on the continent getting together to reflect on a common single theme, Lights of Africa. The ambitious exhibition was put together ahead of the climate change conference in Paris last November, and there were some challenges.
It wasn't easy to gather all these artists. You need to have their contacts. Some were easier to reach than others.
But organizers say they all quickly jumped in. The theme of light resonated differently for the various artists. Some wanted to denounce the way Africa's development is hampered by the widespread lack of electricity, which this Chadian artist equates to light.
Today, when you see all the developing countries, mobile phones, laptops, we need light. And I believe the first source of development today is light.
Some imagine what could be.
The map of Africa lightens up little by little until it becomes the most enlightened continent in the world. Africa is a continent that has the potential to become the beacon of the world. It is that dream I wanted to share with the people.
While others took the theme more figuratively as enlightening ideas and people coming from Africa.
My work revolves a lot around women, so I thought I would also use them to personify the lights of Africa. They are often belittled, but for me, they are the lights.
Painters, photographers, sculptors, the exhibition displays a wide range of African talents.
This kind of event is very rare in Africa, so we are intrigued when there are contemporary exhibitions in Africa on contemporary art. There are 50 different perspectives. It's very interesting and impressive to see all this diversity around that same theme.
The exhibition will be in Abidjan until June before touring in Europe and on the African continent in Senegal, South Africa, and Ethiopia. Emilia Pro VOA News in Abidjan.
The 12th edition of Dark Art, a large exhibition of contemporary art, opens Tuesday in Dakar, Senegal. The exhibit aims to highlight the work of African artists, many of whom already have had success on the world stage. This year's theme is The City in the Blue Daylight, which is a direct quote from a poem by Senegal's first president, Léopold Senghor. Malik Kane, a spokesperson for Dark Art, tells Ricky Strike about why the director chose this year's theme and what it means for the prestigious month-long art event.
This year's Biennale, the 12th one, is an innovation because of the different perspective that we are putting together. As the new artistic director, he is well-known internationally, Simon Jami, wanted to rebrand this Dakar show. He brought some new proposal in terms of artistic offering.
Could you tell me a little bit about what you mean about new artistic offerings?
I mean by new artistic offering, because this time the focus is mainly on indigenous knowledge and indigenous soul, what we have to put together so that the world can be brothers and sisters. They're trying to do a great strong statement so that we can have universally Africa as the center of the new world.
What do you mean indigenous art forms bring people together? Mm. Can you give me an example of one of the artists who exemplifies that?
For example, you know, the same codes are defined in the Western side mainly, but this time it's a new school of art that we're trying to put together because we want a free creation, a free expression based on our identity without being influenced by the West. And one of the things that is debated in one of the colloquium is the state of messy things that we can't organize because we need to invent, to reinvent, and to put together new rules and our own, in our own game.
I read the poem by Léopold Senghor that served as the inspiration for the theme, which is The City in Blue Daylight. Yeah. What does that mean? Can you just give me a little more detail about what it means for the art that's being shown here as well?
To my perspective, as himself, because I'm not the guy who put together this theme, as the artist director that did it, to his perspective, it's very simple. The world is in a globalization situation, right? Mm-hmm. And we need this time to get people together. But we needed to organize it in a time frame and somewhere. And we chose to do it here in Africa. And it's going to be a time for renaissance. Because the day itself is a symbol of renaissance. You know what I mean? We have all this debate about African renaissance and all these issues and crises that the continent is going through. But if you know the momentum, you can get together and take on this challenge of the Renaissance. The symbol of the day here, whether it's blue or not, but the blueness is just a call so that other people can make it happen.
That was Malik Kane, spokesperson for the 12th edition of Dark Art, speaking to Ricky Strayak from Dakar, Senegal. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Irene Cheptai and Caroline Chepkoech clinched a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in women's 10,000 meters at the Peyton Jordan Invitation Meet in Stanford, California State in the United States of America on Sunday. Both debutants at the distance, Cheptai clocked 31 minutes and 13.58 seconds, while Chepkoech ran 31 minutes and 16.38 seconds to post the world's third and fourth fastest times in the event this year. In Nigeria, double Commonwealth Games gold medalist Blessing Okagbare heads a list of Nigerians who are recipients of scholarships from the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, ANOCA. The others are former World Junior 200-meter silver medalist Divine Oduduru, Patience George Okon, Regina George, Funke Oladoye, and Tosin Adeloye. Nigeria Olympic Committee President Habu Gumel told the Lagos media that the scholarships are designed to assist the athletes prepare for the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Meanwhile, Nigeria placed third and Namibia fourth in the women's 4x200-meter relay at the Penn Relays in Pennsylvania State in the United States of America on Saturday. Nigeria also claimed the bronze medal and Namibia placed fourth in the women's 4x400-meter relay. The Nigerian men clinched the bronze medal in 4x200 meters, while Namibia were placed fourth. Turning to handball, Tunisia is drawn with defending champions France in Group A of the men's handball contest at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. According to the draws which were held in Rio de Janeiro, Argentina, Croatia, Denmark and Qatar are also in Group A. In Group B, African champions Egypt face hosts Brazil, Germany, Poland, Slovenia and Sweden. In the women's contest, African champions Angola are the continent's sole representatives in the 12-nation contest. They are in Group A with defending champions Norway. They will also face hosts Brazil, Montenegro, Spain, and Romania. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, May 3rd.
I am delighted to wish Nigerian workers a very happy Workers' Day and also congratulate the Crossover State Governor, Senator Professor Ben Ayade, to have paid his workers on the first day of May, although it was Sunday. Other governors should immediately. I am Prinjong Shea from Obaniku in Ogbugbukato Ranch, Kwazulu, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Authorities in Kenya have arrested the owner of a building that collapsed on Friday in the capital, Nairobi, as the death toll from the accident rose to at least 21 people. Officials say they have detained Samuel Kamau, the owner of the six-story residential building, and they say he will appear in court this week. Rescue workers say dozens of people who lived in the apartment complex are still missing, but that hopes are fading of finding more survivors in the rubble. About 135 people have so far been rescued. That's it for this Tuesday, May 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss Burundi's violence and security. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.